The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this edition of the TWBC podcast. My name's Tony Lightfoot, and glad to have you on board for another episode coming to you from the Greater Miami Water Ski Club and the Greater Miami Pro Tournament. And I'm joined here by Nate Smith, who's fresh off his exploits last weekend at the King of Darkness. So thank you for taking some time to talk to me a little bit about that and the other portions of the season.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And, you know, it's great to be back down here in Miami. We had an event, I think it was 2 years ago here, and yeah. Then took a year off, and now we're back. So it's always great to be back in Florida and especially down here in Miami.
All right, then. So Nate, I mean, last couple of seasons, or I mean this season and maybe the season before, was you weren't quite at your dominating, you know, best. You know, I mean, a lot of that is the fact that now that you're in the workplace and you're a commercial pilot, you know, that takes quite a bit of practice time away from you, you know, and, you know, getting to the point where you're running 39 consistently and 41 does take work, but it's being able to maintain that consistency, you know, that's often overlooked. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. You know, when you take time off or you're not giving it 100%, you can go out and put big scores up occasionally, but to have that consistency, or where something goes sideways, to correct that problem, you're kind of not quick on your feet to you know, to kind of bounce back from problems in the course if you have a bad one ball or something like that. But yeah, the last 4 years I've been doing airline training. It's been year round. There's no breaks in between, so it's four solid years of that. So it's taken a little bit of hit on my skiing, like you mentioned last weekend. I mean, I ran 3 out of 4 41s, so I feel like I'm having a little bit of time getting back to skiing and back to my old self. But, you know, not like, what was it, 2 years ago, I think I didn't lose a tournament. Was it 2 years
yeah,
ago?
So I believe 2-3 seasons
yeah,
ago. Yeah.
So yeah, there's ups and downs, and there's times that I have more time to practice, and this year was one of those that I had to put my head down pretty much after Worlds last year. I didn't ski from Worlds till Swiss, really. Maybe 5-6 sets between Worlds and Swiss was my
winter. Wow. Yeah, so I mean not out in the water or almost hardly been out in the water at all, you know, in that time.
Yeah, and then I came down, I had one day off, so I came down from training for the airlines, skied, and then went back to training. I had three more sets from there until Masters. So again, showed up cold turkey to Masters, unfortunately, but that's the way that it works. You know, the ones that do work full-time and have a full-time job understand it, but you know, I was one that just hung around the lake all day, and you're like, yeah, you got to work, but just come out and play. You know, now you kind of get it, and it's not easy to separate the two, and you know, you have to turn one off to turn the other on, and that's hard to do sometimes.
All right, so let's focus a little bit on this season. The last tournament that we had was the King of Darkness. You made it through into the final. You were paired up against who in the semifinal?
T-Gas was the first round of head-to-head, and then John Travers was the second round.
Okay.
Head-to-head.
In the head-to-head. And I mean, we saw glimpses that weekend where, I've seen in previous tournaments up until that point, the very few times I've seen you, where there were glimpses of that past brilliance that you've been able to exhibit, but just were lacking a little bit of water time. Now on the approach to the King of Darkness, it seemed that you've gotten a lot of your mojo back, so to speak, and you're able to come through with a pretty credible result going forwards. Now, taking that into account, how will you be able to kind of segue that into what you hope to be able to do in Miami?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to stack one on top of the other. You know, that's the biggest thing is, you know, getting to the top is often a lot easier than staying at the top. So to stay at the top for many years in a row is extremely difficult. And then, you know, last weekend you kind of get yourself back there. Now the expectation, like you just said, is to be there. Everybody's expecting me to do what I did last weekend. So the only way out of here is, you know, sometimes down. So winning is kind of staying where I was, and anything less than that is downhill. But, you know, I had a great week of practice prior to the King of Darkness tournament. I was able to practice behind a Mastercraft. You know, we went back to Nautique this week. So I had a couple of sets this week here, not in Miami, but back home. But it was a windy week, so it was a little challenging to get some ski rides in. Took a practice ride here and felt okay. Didn't feel great, but you know, it's different lakes, different sites, different boats, different drivers. It's always different each event, but, you know, hopefully just try to bring some of that confidence that I had last weekend saying, you know what, I can do this. If I take the water and do what I know how to do, I typically come out all right. And that's kind of the mentality that I have, is worry about myself and not worry about what others are doing, because that's the only thing that you can do.
Do you honestly see that much of a difference between the boat brands, you know, when you're slaloming at an elite level? I mean the both high-class tournament boats, the Craigcraft Nautique and the Mastercraft Pro Star, you trained with one prior to the King of Darkness, and your event turned out excellently on that one. Now you're switching back to the Nautique. You know, is there that much of a difference? I mean, I'm sure there are people listening to the podcast, like saying, "Of course, there's some difference." But I mean, I want to find out more upon like the extreme elite level which you occupy.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a difference, and I think that goes across the whole sport of water skiing. Whether using a different ski brand, a different rope, or a different boat, so
prop as well, free blade
props can make a difference. Yeah, you know, within that manufacturer, I mean, it's hard to say, hey, this prop on the Nautique is going to feel like this if you put it on a Malibu or Mastercraft, you know, the same similar prop. But yeah, there's definitely a difference. So that's why I wanted to ski the Mastercraft leading up to King of Darkness. I do find a difference with the timing on the gate. The rhythm of the pull is a little bit different. I will say the wakes are pretty relatively similar across the board of Malibu, Mastercraft, and Nautique. There are some minor differences as you start to get shorter line length.
Are there different keys for each one?
Yeah, yeah. You know, Malibu, which unfortunately we didn't have any tournaments this year that I skied in behind a Malibu, but they run a one-to-one transmission with a three-blade prop, so the reaction time of the engine's a little bit slower. So a lot of times with that boat, you don't want to spike it hard, heavy, and early, or it's going to punish you off the second wake a little bit. So for a Malibu, to me, I just try to stay in rhythm with it. Don't surprise it. Just kind of stay down through both
don't
wakes.
Don't spike it.
Yeah. And then as I move over to a Mastercraft, kind of similar to that, sometimes at shorter line lengths, I struggle getting through the second wake a little bit. There's a little bit of a trough there. Sometimes I pop off the second wake. So for me, again, you don't want to go heavy hard, but you have to make sure you stay down through the second wake with that back shoulder. So not going harder, but just not giving back into the boat.
Is that something that you can possibly change in the zero off? I mean, or do you stay with the same letter number throughout the three boat brands?
You know, I stay the same across all three. I've been the same letter since the day zero off came out. It was just letters, A, B, C, and I started with A. Then they add the numbers 1, 2, 3, and I was A3. And someone accidentally pulled me on A2, and I'm like, yeah, I kind of like that. So I just stayed with A2 forever. So, going back to your question, yes, I tried a different letter with the Mastercraft in practice before King of Darkness. I went from an A2 up to C2. I said, let me just try and get this boat on me earlier, see if it comes off earlier. And it didn't make a bit of difference. I really didn't feel it. And to be honest with you, you know, if you told me I skied A2 behind a Nautique on my lake in Orlando, and you pulled me C2 just now here in Miami, I probably wouldn't have known. It's just, you know, it's different drivers, different lakes, different environment. Just, it's where you become comfortable. But the important part about that is you got to get outside that comfort zone. You know, that's where you start to do well with skiing. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, just being able to perform consistently no matter what the conditions or the boat or whatever throws at you. I mean, and you know, to if you can deal with all of that mess, then you're well on your way, in my estimation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, here this weekend we've got the same boat pulling every single skier, both guys and girls. And the drivers are going to be the same for, you know, all the guys. We got Becky driving on the guys and then Mario driving the women. So everything's the same for each individual skier out there as close as we can get it. So it's about just competing with the people that are there in the moment, basically. But, you know, you mentioned coming off of King of Darkness, a score that big. You know, we never really saw scores that big down here last time we were here. So it's all kind of relative. You know, it may, maybe it'll take something deep 41. Maybe it'll only take a couple at 41. We don't, you know, you never really know until you start getting some of the guys off the line and figure out where that
is. Yeah, but I think it's probably safe to say that in a lot of tournaments, if you get three at 41, it's good, but you realistically need to get a piece of four if you're going to be around come day two, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's, three doesn't do it anymore, unfortunately. You know, that was kind of the safe buoy that everybody has turned three. And it used to be kind of two. You think back in the days with Aaron Larkin that was around. You know, he ran two every single time, but he made an amazing living running two at 41.
Yeah, and Thomas DeGasperi made a living on three.
Exactly. So that just shows you the consistency. Sometimes the consistency is more important than the big scores occasionally. So we'll just have to see how things go this weekend. All it takes is one guy to go out there early, put up a big score, three or four at 41, or run it. And now everybody starts chasing that. And I think that's what happened last week at King of Darkness. You know, we had a couple of big scores early, and the cut was only four, so everybody said, it's go time.
Well, there you go. Okay, let's kind of go on off on a little bit of a tangent now. I do have the cards coming up, but not at the moment. And as you know, and as you probably appreciate probably better than most, water skiing doesn't pay the bills. But let's talk about something that does.
Yeah.
Your commercial flying activity. I mean, I had the pleasure of going up in a plane with you prior to the World Championship, so last season over in one, can't remember the name of the plane now.
It was a diamond.
It was a Diamond 40.
Yep.
And that was a really, really neat experience, you know, and had Vince in the back, you know. It was kind of like, are you going to land this?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's, you know, being an instructor, that's kind of the cool opportunity is I've gotten to take some friends with me and let them fly the plane and it all be legal at the same time to kind of coach you and guide you through possibly landing and taking off and operating the aircraft. So that's been, you know, one of the cool experiences is letting some people like yourself tag along and see what my world was as a flight instructor over the last year.
You said was. Now you are a commercial pilot. But the thing that kind of surprised me in speaking to you away from the podcast is the fact that not so much the fact that you're flying on a regional airline. I mean, it's the path that most pilots take on their way up to being like on a long haul, a plane like a 767 or 777 or 787. But the fact that you are flying on like an Embraer 175, which is like a fairly small plane, but you do it for not just one, but anywhere up to three carriers. I mean, try and explain that a little bit to the good folks out there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't understand that. You know, you go book a Delta flight, and as far as you know, you're flying Delta the whole time. And most of the time, you are. The main routes, or the big routes, say, like Atlanta to Orlando, that is Delta mainline. But if you fly, say, from Atlanta to, like you mentioned earlier, Baton Rouge or places like that, a lot of times, or, you know, like,
or Savannah.
Yeah, Savannah, we go there. So you're typically on a regional airline, and it's an airline that does contract work for the majors. So there's several different carriers throughout the United States that are regionals, and we have like SkyWest, Endeavor, Envoy, Piedmont, Republic Airways. And, you know, when you get on a plane, if you look at the side of the plane, it will say Delta. Inside of the plane, we'll have Delta seats. Your ticket will say Delta. The only way you can tell is if the side of the plane says Delta Connection, that's typically a regional airline, and then your ticket will say Delta Airlines, and it'll say like operated by Republic, Envoy, SkyWest, and, you know, Endeavor. That's how you can tell that you're on a regional aircraft. So a lot of times you don't really know, but that's the stepping stone. That's where you have to start as an airline pilot. Like, I can't even put an application into Delta, American, United, Southwest, until I have about 1,000 hours, at least, under my belt with these guys.
1,000 hours, that for a regional pilot, that would be, that would take how many months, years to get there?
You know, I would tell you, if you fly hard and frequently, you're looking at a year and a half. I'll probably be on pace for about 2 years of it. You know, I started the week of Masters. A lot of people don't realize that, but the week of Masters is when I started. So I was going through quite a bit this year.
Oh, wow.
During that time frame. But, you know, the early months of your time with a regional airline, you're the bottom of the totem pole. So you're typically on what's called reserve, which is like on call. So you know you might be working on certain days, but you're not sure if you're actually going to fly the aircraft. But they can call you or schedule you, and you have to report within 2 hours. So...
So you've ideally got to live somewhere within an hour and a half, 2 hours of the airport that they designate that you fly you from, yeah?
Yeah, so when you get that call, you have 2 hours to be at the gate. So wherever you're at, you've got 2 hours to be at the gate. And I did that for a couple of months, and I actually flew a fair bit, actually. But then the last 2 months, I've been on what's called a long call reserve, and that's a 12-hour call out, which has allowed me to stay in Florida the majority of the time.
Okay.
And I, like, if they told me right now that I had to work tomorrow, my day wouldn't start until 1 p.m. So I could actually wait until tomorrow morning, fly to my base, and then start my day. So that was really nice over the last, you know, month and a half or so. That's what's allowed me to ski tournaments finally. So that's why I've been able to hit these tournaments, because I've worked during some of the days of tournaments and I've just not been called. But also I've worked the morning after or the day before and not been called. So if I was on short call or had an actual flying schedule, which is called a line, I would have to be somewhere. But I've been fortunate and lucky enough to
be here.
Yeah. So like today, I'm on, it's my last day of reserve. But since they didn't tell me anything by, I think it's 8 o'clock last night, I knew that I wasn't working today. Okay. So it worked out well for me. However, yeah. I could have gotten assigned something and worked through this evening and then had to get down to Miami and ski this tournament.
Oh, wow.
So, anyways.
It's a bit of a juggle of the schedule, you know. But it's interesting to see that side of it. So when you're on the actual aircraft, you occupy the right seat, don't you?
I do. So, again, you start in the right seat, which is a first officer.
Mm-hmm.
After you accumulate enough hours for the airline, you can bid to upgrade to captain, which is the left seat. Then you just become, you know, responsible for the aircraft at that point. You're the captain, you know, what you say goes, and you get a little nice little pay increase as well. So
of course,
That's kind of on the horizon. You know, that'll probably be, again, you know, sometime in the middle of the summer ski season. I'm sure I'll have to start going through all that upgrade process again.
But
you know, starting next month, I have what's called a line. I have a full-blown schedule next month, and I fly, well, this month, November.
Yeah.
So I'm busy. I'm very busy this month flying. I think...
no rest for the weary, then.
Yeah, yeah, unfortunately. But you know what? I've gotten to ski a handful of tournaments. I never thought I'd get to travel and ski and still compete this year, and I've been able to balance both, which is really what I've done over the last 4 years. When I started this journey, I kind of waved goodbye to skiing, saying, you know what, if I can ski, I can. If not,
yeah,
I won't. And I had an undefeated season. I had many wins. I had some many ups, but also a few downs as well. So 4 years ago, I wouldn't predict that, you know, where I'm sitting now, I'd be just content with everything that went on.
Yeah, you do mention a lot about skiing a little bit in that little spiel there. So obviously you do place a high importance, a high premium upon what you do out there, and in terms of competing. But there's also a level of accomplishment that goes with flying as well. You know what I mean? So I mean, you're currently flying Embraer 175s right now. They're like the little regional jet, you know, with the engines under the wings. You know, it's not like one of those CRJs that you had to basically squeeze into and basically hold your stomach in, you know. But what would be the ideal equipment for you to fly? I mean, what's your ceiling? What are you looking to get on?
See, that's a question I get asked a lot, and you know, the sky's the limit. You know, everything is out there. Like you can literally do what you want, depending how much work and time and effort you want to put into it. So when I started this journey and got hired on by the regional, and I'm working now and building schedules, I quickly realized, talking to others and the knowledge that I had, that there's two sides to it. There's money and there's quality of life. So you have to balance the two of those. If you bring one up, the other goes down. The more money, quality of life typically goes down. Quality of life goes up, money can go down. Just for scheduling wise, taking days off or living in base or out of base and things like that. Getting to a main line such as Delta, American, or United, life gets a lot better. So you quickly want to try to get to one of those main lines if you can. But as far as aircraft go, you know, I think I just have to see where things go and what's available. And, you know, say if I go fly for Delta, now I have a base that's possibly Atlanta, New York, Seattle, Salt Lake, Minneapolis. Neither one of those are near Indiana or Florida. So I would have to commute to work. Which
is not uncommon.
No, but it'd be nice to live in base. You know, Orlando has a United base, but it's very senior. So it would take some years to get based in Orlando. Southwest does as well. But, you know, I have a friend back in Indiana. He flies for American Airlines. He flies the 787 Dreamliner, and he just goes over to Europe on Monday and comes back on Wednesday, and that's his work week.
You
kind of look at that and you're like, well, that's not too bad. You know, he flies out of Chicago, goes over there, sleeps, comes back, and
That's all you do. I mean, you fly, you sleep, you fly.
Yeah, but you got a lot of days off.
Well, there
you go. You know, you just kind of figure out what might work best. Do you want to be gone 2 days a week, 3 days a week, 5 days a week? You know, it just, I don't know. I really don't know. I'm going to see what things change so quickly in the airline industry. So when that time comes, I'll survey the opportunities and try to figure it out.
All right, then. We're at the point now where it's time to introduce the card section of this conversation here. We normally try and keep the podcast to under 30 minutes, good bite-sized chunks, so to fill the remaining time. And I've done this with Corey and Thomas so far. Nate, pick a card.
Oh, boy.
Here we go.
Let's go with this.
You've been dreading this, I can tell. Okay, let me read it off. What's your favorite number? Any particular reason why you like that number?
It's a pretty easy one.
Okay.
You know, I could have two favorite numbers, actually.
Okay, it depends whether it's European or American.
No, not necessarily. The first one that pops into my head, I'll tell you, is 43
off?
For obvious reasons. Yeah.
Okay.
World record. If I had to pick a second one, I'd tell you 14. You know that number?
14.
Yeah, think about it.
Okay.
It has to do with skiing.
Okay.
It has to do with a tournament.
Oh, the amount of times that you've won a tournament? Or?
Not me. Somebody else.
Ah.
He's no longer with us.
Oh, Andy.
Andy, Masters.
Yeah. Masters
and
title.
And Moomba.
And Moomba as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not something I'm chasing, but it's definitely something that sets the bar. So whenever we think of ourselves as skiers being as great as we are, you get to bring Andy up a little bit and be like, okay, well, this guy kind of killed us a little bit. So, you know, I think I'm at seven? I don't know. I actually don't know. It's 7 or 8 Masters. Maybe it's 7.
You're halfway there.
So to think what Andy did, he doubled that. Which is just insane.
It's just remarkable when you look back.
Exactly.
All right, then pick another one.
All right, here we go.
Let me read off this one. Have you ever had a "this can't be happening" moment? What was it?
Yeah, I guess one just popped into my head. I don't really know, but again, it has to do with skiing. I flew all the way down to Colombia 2 weeks ago for our Pan Am Championships. Drove all the way to Miami to catch a flight out because the hurricane was going on in Florida. Went down there, missed the gates at 35. The cut to get in was 3:38 off, and I'm like, seriously, like I flew all the way down here for that. So, not an exciting answer, but that for some reason that just popped into my head of like a situation that 3:38 is the cut, and I missed the gates at 35.
So, well, what's the expression? It happens to the best of us.
It happens to everybody. I mean, if it hasn't yet, it will. You know, everybody has an issue with that sometimes.
Pick a card.
All right.
You're picking these questions. Let's not forget this, okay? Do you have a favorite T-shirt? If so, what's on it, and what does it say?
My go-to T-shirts, just because they're the most comfortable, are actually California Ski Ranch shirts from out in California. Nothing special, but it's just the most comfortable shirt that I have.
Egyptian cotton, I'm guessing.
I guess. I don't know. They're just, I don't know. They're the most comfy.
All right, then. Pick another one. All right, then. Do you have a signature move or quirk that people notice or comment on?
I don't know that I have a signature move or quirk other than just being...
Do you have anything to do with your gait shot, for example? I mean, whenever you pull out, what are you thinking of? Are you bleeding off speed or what have?
I've got one that I probably have to give credit to Cale Burdick, but going out the exit gates, the spin of the handle, when you have all that slack that you see people start doing.
Oh, okay.
You know,
like rodeo
stuff. I saw Cale doing that when I was growing up, and then I started doing it. And now I've seen some others kind of copy that as well. So, I would say maybe that.
All right. So pick another one. Pick another one. Keep going. All right, then. What's your favorite microwavable food?
Popcorn.
Popcorn. You could be a little bit more adventurous. I mean, given the lifestyle that you have, you know, I mean, you're probably eating out a lot, you know, and if you're not eating, your
leftovers.
Food leftovers or food prep or that kind of stuff. So anything more adventurous beyond the typical American popcorn?
I mean, that's about all I really use it for other than leftovers. I mean,
no cheese, no melted cheese or anything on top of it?
I don't think so.
Or some of that sprinkle stuff that they put on popcorn these days? I don't know.
No.
Nothing.
That's about it.
Nothing. That's boring.
Boring.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, boring, pick a card. Here. All right, then. Describe your sense of humor in one word.
I don't know.
Goofy, eclectic, stale.
I don't know. I'm quiet about stuff. Like, kind of one-liners at times.
Okay. Quiet. Okay.
I don't know.
Quiet sense of humor. Okay. I don't know if they're...
Dry, I guess. I don't know.
Dry.
There you go.
Dry. There we go. Or wry sense of humor.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, then. Here we go. Here's another one. What's the weirdest thing you've seen in someone else's home? You don't have to be you don't have to go specific and tell us whose home you found that in, although that would be...
I have no idea.
No, like a statue or figurine or something, you know, the person traveled to get hold of, or I don't know, or someone's ex-Halloween costume, you know, that scares the living whatever's out of you, considering that yesterday was Halloween.
It was. I don't know, Tony. Nothing really comes to mind on...
Okay.
Maybe it will later, but I don't have really anything on that.
All right, then. Two cards. Which one is it going to be? Left or right? Left.
Take the left one.
All right, then. If you could bring one famous person back from the dead, who would you pick? I suspect I know this one already.
Yeah.
Given that you've mentioned him already.
Yeah, we already talked about him. I'd say Andy Mapple. I got to spend a lot of time with him in the last few years of his life, and I learned so much, but I feel like there was so much that there was still to learn from him, and the information that he had and the knowledge that he was able to pass along. So, I wish I could go back and just kind of sit and laugh with him eating his Hershey chocolate bar and a Diet Coke and that laugh that everybody remembers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that laugh distinctly.
You could hear it everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Which brings us down to card number 10. And the torture is finally over, because when you were a kid, did you have any posters on your wall? If so, what were they?
It's hard to remember. It was a while ago. It was an assortment of water ski posters.
I'm guessing one of them was Andy.
Andy was there. I know there was one of Scott Ellis jumping, too. I hate to say it, but crashing. It was where one ski was kind of back behind the other, and
probably the one that that damaged his right ankle, that area.
It could be, but you know, it was back when we had at Nationals, you would walk around as a kid, and there were athletes that would sign posters, and they were all there, so you would bring them home, and you know, on top of that would be
I enjoyed those days, yeah, you know, at Nationals. I mean, I was at Nationals this year, you know, and there were good few people there, you know, but, you know, it still has a long way to go to get anywhere close to the vibe that it used to have. I mean, especially for some of the Nationals that were West Palm, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough sometimes. I mean, I made it out to Nationals this year in between work trips. I mean, it was one of those that I flew through the night to get there, skied that day, and then flew back red eye that night. So I was really only in California for 12 hours. But, you know, nothing negative towards the site out there at all.
No, of course not.
It's hard to, you know, it's just like when it's in West Palm, you know, I think people from the West Coast travel better than us from the East Coast, to be honest. I mean, you see a lot more West Coast people come to the East for Nationals, but not so much of us going that direction. So, you know, the bigger crowds, I feel like somewhere in the middle in Kansas is where I've seen some bigger.
Mystic.
Yeah, you know, I've seen some bigger crowds. And like I said, nothing negative towards California or the events they're putting on, because we're back there next year. But we just got to get everybody on the East Coast to travel over there. I know it's a long way and expensive, but, you know, they come our way, so we got to go their way.
Yeah. I think it's only fair, but there you go. So that concludes this podcast. Anything you'd want to say in closing, any thanks, acknowledgements, that kind of thing going on?
Yeah, I mean, obviously just all the continued support that I have through my ups and downs over the last 4 years. You know, there's been a few times it's like, well, is he even skiing or is he going to compete or not? But I've still had the support stand behind me as far as sponsors and things like that, just so that I can get on my feet and have a solid career aside from water skiing. I love water skiing. That's why I'm here. That's why I do both. And I'll compete forever. But, you know, I've got to have something that I can also make a living with and continue to live on a water ski lake in Florida and train for water skiing. So, and, you know, on top of that, just all the supporters that watch water skiing, listen to this podcast, that donate to the sport in any way, whether it's money or time or volunteering, whatever that may be. And, you know, the events that are put on, such as last weekend, the Garcia family, you know, did all that work to put that tournament on. We got Gonzalo here and the Miami Ski Club, and all these volunteers here. So everybody from around the world that puts time in, as I would like to thank.
All right, then. So thank you once again, Nate, and thank you once again, indeed, for tuning in to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and as always, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.